Arihito Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaritamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so page 13. Manu continued, the entire cosmic manifestation is the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who has millions of names and unlimited potencies. He is self-effulgent, unborn, and changeless. He is the beginning of everything, but he has no beginning. Because he has created this cosmic manifestation by his external energy, the universe appears to be created, maintained, and annihilated by him. Nonetheless, he remains inactive in his spiritual energy and is untouched by the activities of the material energy. Therefore, to enable people to reach the stage of activities that are not tinged by fruit of results, great saints first engage people in fruit of activities. For unless one begins by performing activities as recommended in the Shastras, one cannot reach the stage of liberation or activities that produce no reactions. So the idea is that if you're not performing activities that are based on authority, then how will you come to the transcendental platform? That's the whole idea. So, because otherwise, if we don't follow Shastra, we will follow the mind. That's the principle. That's how it'll work. So, it's not a matter of we like it or not, or, you know, it fits in with what we do or not, or any of these kind of things. It's a matter of, are we willing to work on the transcendental platform? So, for in the beginning, because he said people start with fruit of work, they start with the idea of that I'll get benefit from this, but at least they're approaching authority. Because that's the first principle. If we don't accept authority, then the whole process won't work. Because ultimately Krishna's the authority. He's the one that we're trying to follow. Then he has his expansions and everything and his representatives. We're able to accommodate that as a concept. Then we can get into the spiritual world. Right here, the whole point of being here is that we see the creation separate from Krishna. So for the great personalities, like he's been pointing out, Mana's been pointing out, and the others have been pointing out, for the Paramahamsa, he sees this creation is Krishna. That's how he starts this conversation. It is him. But at the same time, he's beyond it. But it still works by his method. So if we see him, then we would want to see him in everything. Therefore, we want to include him in all the activities that we perform. So the minimums we're starting with, at least we're following the authority of Scripture, because that comes from the Lord. That will then situate us in goodness. From goodness, then we can see the difference between our activities in passion and ignorance. And then gradually we start to be able to tell the difference between pure goodness and goodness. Right? Once we come to that platform, then we can get to actually being situated there on the transcendental platform, right? So unless we're able to do that, then it's not going to work. So if we start off looking at the creation that I am from this particular location, therefore the whole creation has to center around that fact, we'll never get anywhere. We can't. Not spiritually. One may get, you know, some material benefits, but one can't get spiritual. That can't be the center. Because the beginning of devotional service comes from your identity. And if it's not, I'm servant of Krishna, I'm not this body. But if it's, I'm servant of Krishna, but I am this body, there's going to be a conflict. Therefore, then, that's why then Prabhupada says, Manu gives the principles by which to follow.
I'm just laughing because, you know, the ultimate goal is that it's going to happen, that I'm serving a person, I am this divine, this is divine.
Yes, yes.
But on this level, it's perverted.
Yes, because whatever's the highest there is the lowest here. Like that. So because they are their body there, here then being the concept that I'm the body is the lowest. That's the way the animals think. Like the animals think, I'm from here, right? This is my block. You know, you're on it. They start barking. So that's where it comes from. So somehow it's thought glorious. Oh, no, I'm from this place. I'm from that place. So I'm from this region. I'm from that. And so therefore I'm special. But that's actually the way the animals think. Humans, then they think, I am human. And human has to follow Manu, because Manusha comes from Manu. So the laws of... Our cat is back. Yes. Speaking of those who think they're their body, here he is. Okay. Huh? Yeah, maybe after hearing so much of them, and they come to, he may go back to Godhead before us. Right? Oh, this is the brother. Sorry,
it's not him.
I don't think so. Otherwise, he would have meowed and stuff. Huh? Hmm.
We talk about consciousness, that it all depends on the intent and whom we want to see as the center of our activities. But usually, we migrate. Because there's no consistency. More or less one day we do desire, but in theory, practically.
Yes, that's what we learn from the, how you say, the important principle of diaspora. Is that we leave our natural position and go somewhere else. But the difference is because it's from our own desire. So, that's the meaning of practice. Practice means that we're starting from, we come in contact, we associate, we take up the principle, and then we start to practice. And in practice, that's then where sometimes it'll work, will not. That's the Vishwanath points that out, is that in Anartha Nivritti, the first stage is going to be we're very enthusiastic because it's new. But when that newness wears off and the, you know, and then the other things in our life kind of come back into, you know, perspective, then one day we're enthusiastic, one day we're not. Right? Then the third stage of Anartha Nivritti is we start to use the Shastra to back up or rationalize our material attachments. Like that. That's the third stage. You know, that's what we were talking about in the beginning. So when we're unwilling to follow the scriptures because I'm from a particular locale, I have a particular body, I'm from a particular background, or, you know, all those things. Like you have that professor that went to visit Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so he sent him down to the Goshala to talk to the devotee there. So in his mind, no, this is not for me. I'm intelligent. Why would I be talking to a guy from the Goshala? Right? So that's the third stage. The fourth stage is, okay, you know, then we're going to do this, right? You know, this is what it says, we're going to do it, and, you know, come what may, we go for it. So that's called war with Maya. Then, once Maya sees, okay, this guy's serious, then the war will be over, but the only thing is that then we'll just be tripping. You know, we start to do something and all that, it doesn't quite happen. But instead, it's not that it's a matter we're trying to get from material to spiritual. It's on the spiritual platform we're not very effective. Right? Then when you get to the sixth stage, spiritually we're effective. From that, then, as Shastra mentions, you perform devotional service, all benefits come. One's getting all benefits, but one gets distracted by those benefits. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. When you get past that, then you get a taste. That's when ruchi comes. And when ruchi comes, then all that other stuff doesn't mean anything anymore. That's when you see is that it's Anartha Nivritti is no longer a burden, or it's a problem, or it's you know, dry or difficult. It's because there's a taste. So then one dynamically comes. So that's what it says. Bob extends down to ruchi. So from ruchi, then that's where when it picks up very, very quickly. So it'll be plodding along up to Ruchi, but once one gets that taste, then it goes very quickly. Right? So the point is one just has to stick at it, and if you stick at it long enough, then it starts to work.
How long? Depends.
Depends. For Maharaj Katvanga, it was a moment. You know, as we've heard regularly. And, you know, I think Prajapati Daksha is still working on it. After half a lifetime of Brahma. Right?
He's got stuck on an arc.
He's got stuck there because he thinks he's special. He's great. You know, he's the son of Brahma. He's so all it's all about his birth, his prestige, his place, his all that. He gets stuck. That's why it's not recommended. It's not that we don't take into consideration how people act. Like when Prabhupada went to America, it's not that he didn't consider how Americans think and function. But he never let one think, I am America. And because of that, I can only do this. Or things, I have to adjust things according to me. Prabhupada never let anyone think like that. But it was all geared towards how Americans can understand. One has to understand. Because if it's your identity, that's it, you're finished. Means you situate yourself very nicely in being a neophyte. And of neophyte, there's a good chance it's going to be a neophyte in ignorance. Because you're opposed to the scriptures, it's all about what you're doing. It's not the higher level of ignorance where you follow everything, but you're envious. It's where you don't like to follow everything. And you're envious. So it's just not good. It's just not a position that's taken. It's just not, it's never recommended, it's never allowed. Like that. Because as soon as the focus goes on, I am this body, then it's a problem. You can put it onto your action. Because the body is produced from ignorance. So it's never the focus. The senses are in passion. Right? The mind's goodness. So that's why then you engage the senses. So Prabhupada would put the attention on engagement of the senses. Do something great. You know, that's what, you know, being a Westerner, we do great things. Like that. But it would be on that. He'd never let it be on the body. As soon as it's on the body, you're in ignorance. Does that make sense? But you consider the body, but it's not about the body. That's the difficult thing to get. Like I was explaining the other day, that the wedding arrangements were being there, and the girl was, you know, it suddenly became all kind of got into a weird headspace that she wanted this and that and so many things because it's her day. But what she doesn't understand is her day, but it's not about her. It's about her and the prospective husband being connected to Krishna. Because you see the mantras in the wedding exactly say that. So that's the thing is, it's in consideration of the conditioning, but it's not about the conditioning. As soon as you make it about the conditioning, we're Westerners, we're this, we're that, then you're already finished. Maya's already got you. So that's the whole thing. But it doesn't mean that that's there. You know, it's just like everybody's considerate of the kid. If there's a child in a group of adults, they're considerate of the kid. But at the same time, as the kid can't think, oh, it's all about me, now I can do what I want. As soon as they do that, then he's behaving badly. So as soon as you bring it to yourself as the center, then it's wrong. So that's why then Manu is saying all these things. Because if you understand the whole creation is Krishna, then how can you act that I am this body? Because the body that you're talking about is Krishna. Its function, its ability, all those different things, those all happening by the potencies of Krishna, the universal form. Therefore, if it's Krishna, Krishna has his ways to do things. And how would Krishna like to do things in this form? He would do it in a very specific way. And we're saying, no, I'm going to do it in a different way because I'm this body. But the point, we're the soul, we're not the body. If anybody's the body, it's Krishna's the body. And then Krishna has given the laws how you deal with that particular body. It means, are you going to cooperate with him in this form as the body? Or are you going to oppose it and try to do whatever you want? That's the whole thing. That's the difficulty. So we're thinking that, oh, we're being very intelligent here, and we're being practical, yukta vairagya, we're connecting everything to Tibet, where there's no connection at all. Because the connection is, it is Krishna's. Ishavasha, it belongs to Krishna. He gives you a quota. So this conditioned nature is our quota. But still, it's his. Like we'll say, money belongs to Krishna, it's Lakshmi, but the body also belongs. Why is it Lakshmi belongs if the body doesn't? So that's Manu's point, is that all these rules are, since we don't know Krishna, these are the rules then, how you deal with the conditioned nature, since we don't know Krishna. And since we have to deal with it in connection to Krishna, therefore the Shastra is there to tell us how it's done. And if we oppose that, oh no, because I'm this body, we can't do these things, then that's a problem. Since Krishna's created it, he's the universal form, he's eternal, right? It's not that it's 2016, so we can't use all this Vedic stuff because that's so old. The problem is Krishna's eternal. His laws are eternal. The laws of nature are eternal. So there's no question of not doing that. So that's why he says people are first engaged in fruitive activities, according to Shastra. So for those who are not interested in devotional service at all, at least they're pious. That's the point. And piety means following Shastra. Not following Shastra, that's impious. Right? On this level. The actual, yes. So then, once they're in that position, they can do that, coming in contact with the devotees, then they'll be able to see that that pious activity in connection to Krishna, because the results are for the Lord. They're not for us. Having come to that platform, then it moves on to, now you look at it through knowledge instead of just action. That brings one from, so you're going from karma to karma yoga, and then karma yoga to jnana yoga. Right? But then you're supposed to get from that to bhakti yoga. Right? That's the whole idea. So that's then what Manu's recommending. We'll say, oh, it's just archaic laws, this, that, blah, it has nothing to do with us and all this and that. Then who does it have it to do with? Who does it have to do with then? So then who makes the laws? Because if we don't follow the Vedic laws that are given by Krishna, then whose laws will we follow? So according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you either follow religion or you'll make up your own. Right? So now before, making up your own wasn't allowed. But now with the introduction of the modern way of thinking, making your own religion is quite popular. But then the problem is, everybody makes their own, and then where's the common platform? Where's pure devotional service? Because the discussions aren't about pure devotional service. It's about, I have this conditioning, I need money, I need social prestige, I need sense gratification, I need this, that. And so then the problem comes is, where is Krishna? Where's the common point? So that's the point. Vedic system, Daiva Varna Ashram, the common point's Krishna. All the different ashrams, all the different varnas, they can all cooperate because Krishna's the center. But if we make it my conditioning's the center, then good luck finding 2-3 other people in the world that have a similar that you can get along with. That's good luck. Because that's all you're going to get. Because the problem is it's not even that you say, okay, this is it, this is what I'm sticking to. No, one's leaving it open for options. So because options are there, it keeps changing. And so even the 2 or 3 friends you might find, even that gets old. So in other words, in the name of community, in the name of universality, they cut themselves down to their own niche where they're the only one in it. So it's just the opposite of what's universal. Manu is universal. Everyone in the universe follows. And then we're going to make up something that's going to be better than what he's given? Right. So that's the thing. So therefore, if one doesn't follow what's recommended in the Shastra, one can't get to the stage of liberation. And when you're on the liberated platform, that's when you can perform pure devotional service. Right. So we're performing mixed devotional service, trying to come to that platform. So what are we doing? We're practicing Naishkarmya. Right? Performing the activity without an attachment to the result. So if I'm not attached to the result, okay, we start there. But then, where does attachment come from? It comes from contemplation. Right? So that means prajumna. Attachment will be aniruddha, right? Your goal. Then it will come from prajumna in sambandha. Right? So where does contemplation come from? That comes from your attitude. Where do you get the attitude from? Your knowledge. So in the area of knowledge, that's where your identity is. So if your identity is mundane, then your actual goal being that it's nice karma is not going to be very strong. But when your identity is I'm servant of Krishna, then the attitude of servant of Krishna, then the desire to please Krishna, then the action goes well. So that's the process. That's what you're trying to get to. So, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yes.
But in our problems, usually the identity is okay. The attitude is not exactly. Prayojana is all right because we try to follow Shastra. And Abhideya as much as possible.
Yes.
So our weakness in sambandha mainly?
There's. If the attitude's not right, then you don't get. Just like you can take... attitude, knowledge, because the more you have the proper knowledge, the more, let's say, just like devotees' earlier days in the movement. Now, that focus on pure devotional service, that enthusiasm, it's all for Krishna, that was very nicely there. Some knowledge is there, they have the fundamental knowledge, it works and all that, but then the problem is due to lack of understanding, actually, etiquette and varnashram, that Prabhupada would talk about. Then they don't deal with each other so nicely, because if we're not this body, then we don't have to, etiquette's not important. But that comes from impersonalism. If we're not this body, but the body belongs to Krishna, then we respect Krishna, then why we wouldn't respect the body? So therefore, dealing with each other, seeing that the situations are proper, that was lacking. So it meant that they were nicely situated, but what had to be done was go further into the understanding and the philosophy. But if we look at things from the secondary instead of the primary, so devotees had the primary, they were just bad at the secondary. But then the solution comes along as we introduce political correctness, and so we change the secondary. So the devotees had strong primary, the secondary was a little weak, but it was at least based on the direct activities of devotional service. It lacked the indirect, right? You know, how to deal with families, money, and social things and stuff like that. And so by having that, then that's lacking, so devotees are wanting that, so what do? They take the direct activities, throw that out, because that's getting in the way of the social things, and put the focus, instead of on the primary, on the secondary. So instead of having primary with weak secondary, instead of building up the secondary, you throw out the primary, you throw out the secondary, and you replace it with some mundane secondary. And then claim, oh, we're devotees, we're this community, all this and that. It's like that. Like I said, we can look seriously at the Amish, but we can't look at the Vedic system. That means there's something wrong. And especially notice, the Amish aren't in Europe. Or in Africa, South America. Where are they? They're not even in Canada. So that's the problem. So, because it's on our soil, therefore we can relate to them, but someone so far away we can't relate to. I was just thinking about it today. Now, someone who identifies with the West, okay? Could they eat Chinese food?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay? Could they eat like falafels and some Middle Eastern things? Yeah, baklava? Yeah, cool. Okay, what about Italian? Yeah, hey, French food and that. Okay, French fries are great, but leave the snails, right? Like that, you know? You know, a few things of the British, okay, like that. What about Mexican? Is that okay? Yeah, that's okay. You notice like that. Notice the what's going around here. The whole world you can eat from, just not India. India's the one, oh no, we can't eat from there. It's not our lifestyle. The whole rest of the world, but not there. Interesting. So that's conditioning. That's the mode of ignorance. So that's why when we take Manu, then we have a common culture. Then we have something everybody can do. Now, how well one can do it, it's about training. and about contemplation. And that's what he said, Prabhupada mentioned, is that with training and that contemplation, then anybody, no matter how degraded they are, they can come to the transcendental platform. So that's a good system. Because other things are going to be weak. Footnote 4. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, so as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. Right? So someone who's attached to their activities, you don't change their activities. You change their consciousness. But we understand that this is a beginning stage. This is not the advanced stage. Does that make sense? That's the important thing to note. It is a viable method. It is a recommended method, but it's the beginning stage. Yes.
We also say that madhyams, they feel comfortable in doing what they're doing in devotional service.
Yes.
It's not a beginning stage, though.
But the point is it's naishkarmya. It's about Krishna. The madhyama doesn't have a problem with following, you know, what you're supposed to do.
No, here the point of, you know, they don't stop them from work.
Okay, yes, yes. So if you're saying that, but then here is they're attached to the fruit of results. So the madhyama won't be attached to fruit of results. Okay. It may be he's performing the same activity, but that's the activity, not about what he's the other aspects.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? As you get more gross, those will be less. I mean, activity itself, that may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But the results of it, that's not what they're looking for. So madhyama means nishkam karma yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Neophyte means it can be nishkam karma yoga or it can be sakam. So that's what we're talking about. When Prabhupada was there, he said his disciples were pure devotees, third class pure devotees, because they're situated like that. But the problem with neophytes are they don't necessarily recognize other devotees and know how to deal properly. But the solution to that is come to the madhyama platform. Don't introduce modern, you know, social concepts. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, not able to understand how the Lord can simultaneously act and not act, the sages attempt to accomplish this at different times. Therefore, the sages first perform actions in order to attain non-action, naishkarmyam. Right, so you're trying to get to the platform of not being absorbed in this material. But because one doesn't know the difference in the beginning, one performs the actions and then from that gets to it. Right? Naishkarmya. Because the point is naishkarmya doesn't mean doing nothing. Naishkarmya is about not being attached to the results. See, the Mayavadis try to make it easy. You do no work, you get no results, nothing to be attached to. But that doesn't act, they say, therefore they're advanced. But actually, if you put them in an environment of results, would they be able to remain detached and be naishkarmya? That's the question. So whether they're actually advanced or not is another thing. And as we see, you know, example given between Haridas Thakur and Vishwamitra, then not so advanced. Like that. Not so advanced.
Vishwamitra was in Mayavadi?
Vishwamitra is really worried about his social status, though he's good. He does his duty. He knows his knowledge. As far as probably knowing the details of the Veda, like all the brahmanas, what you're supposed to do and everything like that, the technicalities of everything, you could probably say he's one of the ones that knows it the best. So as far as a scholar goes, a Vedic scholar, you're not going to find much more of a Vedic scholar than him. But knowing devotional service, he is not at all famous for that. You know? He's just not. Right? So that's the thing. Because when Gargi, I think it's Gargi. Was it Gargi?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll come across her in Vedanta Sutra, she's explained. Gargi was explaining to, asking him questions on transcendence. He didn't even know the topic existed. So then like that, so as not to disrupt the minds of the ignorant, you know, in this case, when it says ignorant men, it meant this guy, attached to the fruit or result of his prescribed duty. So he was a scholar. He does these things. From doing these things, he gets recognized. He's attached to that. So she seeing this and being a Paramahamsa, therefore, then she just left it. She herself announced, after starting to ask questions, everybody else had asked questions, he could answer every one of them. No one else had another question to ask. She said, okay, now that he's done. She's a Paramahamsa, but being a lady, she just leaves it, because the men will think they're important, so let all the men speak, and at the end, she'll speak. Right? So, that's what we mean, is if you're actually transcendental, not the body, you don't care about following the rules of the body. Like that. So then she asked questions when she saw that he couldn't answer them and he didn't even know that they existed. Then she, because in their mind is who knows, you know, all the scriptures well, and all the questions they asked were all on technical details and yajnas and this and that, mantras, explanations. So therefore, in that capacity, he is the best. Because he doesn't know, he won't understand that someone else has more knowledge than him. So she herself stood up and then announced that he's the greatest scholar in the assembly. So that's the point that Krishna is making. You don't disturb, because they can't see. You know, they said. But at least he's following the Vedic version. You know, though he actually doesn't know the transcendental position. So then what becomes difficult is someone's not following the Vedic version and claiming it's an advanced position. That's more difficult. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so by performing the action, then you learn to give up the results. And when you give up the results, then you start to work on the principle, the results are for Krishna. Right? That makes this points. But devotional service already includes that. So one may not have performed proper fruitive activities, but now in Krishna consciousness, you perform the recommended action that is for Krishna. So then the whole point of one's trying to get from the process of karma and jnana are already gained by bhakti. It's not a separate endeavor. It's already included. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. In Bhagavad Gita 3.9, Lord Krishna advises, Yagyart tat karma no nyatra loko yam karma bandhanaha. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Generally, everyone is attracted to hard labor for becoming happy in this material world. But although various activities are going on all over the world simply for the sake of happiness, unfortunately, only problems are being created from such fruitive activities. Footnote 5. Paladmara similarly says, a materialistic person, thinking himself very advanced in intelligence, continually acts for economic development. But again and again, as enunciated in the Vedas, he is frustrated by material activities, either in this life or in the next. Indeed, the results one obtains are inevitably the opposite of those one desires. Right? You know, the man, he works very hard to get money. The idea is he'll have money, he'll be happy, he gets all kinds of money. Then he finds his friends are just interested in him because of his money. His relations are just interested in the money. Everybody's just interested in the money. So he's not happy. So he gets the opposite of what he wanted. So that's Prahlad Mars's point. In this world, every materialist desires to achieve happiness and diminishes distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however, one is happy as long as one does not endeavor for happiness. As soon as one begins his activities for happiness, his conditions of distress begin. So as soon as you start to work for your own happiness, that moment, then the distress that goes along with it begins. And fortunately, depending on what you do, then if you work from goodness, you'll get all the unhappiness first, then finally the happiness. And if you work with passion, which is more popular, then you'll start with a little bit of happiness, and then you'll get all the unhappiness.
Little.
Hmm?
But it should be little unhappiness too. It should be even.
Yes, it's even. But the point is you never see it that way.
Mm.
You know, all the happiness you got, that's only a little bit, and all the distress, even though it's exactly balanced, you'll say, oh, this is more than too much. No matter what it is, even if it's a little bit. You know, it's the end of the world. You know, a little bit, you know, eat your spinach. Oh, it's the end of the world. You know, stuff like that. Yeah. 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 Okay. So that's more in this. Only problems are created from such fruitive activities. Therefore, it is advised that active persons engage in activities of Krishna consciousness, which are called yajna, because then they will gradually come to the platform of devotional service. Yajna means Lord Vishnu, the yajna purusha, the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Bhaktaram yajna tapasam sarva loka maheshwara. Bhagavad Gita 5:29. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the enjoyer, and therefore if we begin our activities for His satisfaction, we will gradually lose our taste for material activities. So that's what we're trying to do. Perform the activity so we lose the taste, not perform the activity and that is fine. Or the Shastra says we can perform these material activities, so therefore it's all right. So therefore, because I'm a devotee, they're devotional service. No, the idea is that you're performing them so that we lose the taste. You perform the activity, the taste gets lost, you continue to perform the duties. That's the difference. In the Vedic system, you're following the duties as given in Varnashram, as Manu mentions. Then, when you lose the taste for those results, if it's your duty, you continue it. If it's not your duty, you give it up. Let's say a Soma Yagya. It's not your duty. It's something you could do, so you give it up, right? Right? Didn't you find that yourself? Right? You know, you had 3 years of you know food grains and that stored away so you could do the Somya Yagya, but by the time you got them, you figured, hey, why do I need to do that? So then you gave all those grains to the Kichri for the Kichri distribution. And everything, right? Yeah, like that. That's exactly how it works, right? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So then the problem is that if we think that, no, it's all right to be attached to these things, we're not going to advance. That's the point. Is that, no, we start there. We have that attachment. And then we start to give it to Krishna. But by doing that, we conclude Krishna in the thing, then we lose our taste, right? Now, when we lose our taste and we've been following Vedic, we still have a form to follow. So the community, everything still works. But if you're going by modern speculative vox populi things, then when you lose the taste, you stop doing the activity. Now what do? What do you replace it with?
Another set.
Yeah, of course. That's the whole concept of midlife crisis. This is the time in the life where you can bona fide change everything and then say you're great. Yeah. Right? So that's the idea. The advantage of the Vedic is that when you do lose the attachment, the form still remains the same. So it's consistent. Right? But in the modern, as soon as you lose the taste, you stop doing that activity because the Western culture is based on impersonalism. I'm attached, I do it. I'm not attached, I don't do it. So then the whole fabric falls apart. Now how do you define duties? Because how many vox populi unattached people are there? Right? Not a whole lot. Continuation of the purport. No, it seems to be because it's all close. Yes, okay. So Sutta Goswami declared to the great assembly, so there's still Prabhupada's purport, of sages at Naimisharanya, O best among the twice born, it is concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, dharma, according to caste divisions and order of life, is to please Lord Hari. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.13. So we're discussing this because Manu's recommended. Prabhupada says that one should follow these things. That's how you're going to, that's human life. But following them is not the perfection. It's not about how good you are at following them. It's how good you are at doing them to please the Lord. That's what makes it perfect. So if you can follow the Varnashram system, please Krishna, then it's perfect. So human beings follow Varnashram, therefore you follow your duties as a human to please Krishna, that perfects human life. According to Vedic principles, everyone must act according to his classification as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. Everyone should progress towards perfection by acting in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. Some sit here, haritoshanam. Right, so one has to do these things because that's where human life begins. Right? It means human form of life begins when you're born. But human life begins when you start following this. And with the idea of pleasing the Lord. So that's what Varnashram is for. It's meant for pleasing the Lord. People can use it for material gain. But it's meant for pleasing the Lord. So one makes that progress by going through these stations to advance in Krishna consciousness. Then one cannot please Krishna by sitting idly. So one has to do something. So that's the weakness in the Vedic. You're doing as your consciousness, you move to the next station. But in the modern, you're doing something because your attachment to it, because of your speculation. Then when you lose interest in it, you stop doing it. So then what happens? You become idle. So the mode of ignorance takes over. Then when you come up with a new plan, then the mode of passion comes in. People work very hard. Then somehow or another doesn't work out. Then you lose your interest. Then back to ignorance. Right? Isn't that a stereotypical kind of Western thing? Is that the guy's really into something, then something goes badly wrong, so he gives it up. He just sits at home and just slums around, and everybody's worried about him, trying to get him interested again in something and this and that. Then finally something comes up. Now again he's fired up again and right into it. Now everybody's happy. Okay, everything's back to normal. What's normal? Mode of passion. So Vedic system is no mode of goodness is normal. Right? Then you can be stable. And then doing that where the results are not for yourself, for Krishna, that brings you to pure goodness. Right? So that's the difficulty. The result of passion is going to be ignorance. Right? So goodness, its purpose is to get you to pure goodness. Okay. One must act according to the directions of the spiritual master for the sake of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then one will gradually come to the stage of pure devotional service, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.12. Knowledge of self-realization, even though freed from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a concept of the infallible God. So, it must be about Krishna. If we know we're not the body, but it's not about Krishna, right? So we say, oh, I'm not the body, so therefore I can do anything I want. Then is that self-realization of knowing you're not the body actually about Krishna? No. It's just that realization, so now you can do what you want. So before it was impersonalists were renounced. Now impersonalists are total karmis, you know. Work it out. It's Kali Yuga. Right? Yes.
You say that being personal is by philosophy, but by action, we're karmic.
Yes, basically. Yes. So then it's not good. That's why by philosophy you're Vaishnav. By religion, then we follow Varnashram. That's the position. Because otherwise, if we reject Varnashram, we have to make up our own religion, and it's definitely not going to fly if we try to use one of the Abrahamic. Like that, I think they already tried that there on the east coast there, at one of the farms. That didn't work out so well, and so then you know, then you bring it down like that. You know, nobody's trying the other two, like that, so
they
much.
Already tried.
They already tried those also. Yeah, yeah. And so then you know, a little Buddhism, a little this and that, you know, goes well. So therefore New Agey is the one that it's not exactly mundane, but it's, you know, I mean grossly mundane, but it's not exactly Vedic, you know, kinda you can take it any way you want to you know, so, but that's not a strong position.
Middle path.
Pranamoy, yes. Yeah, if you think pranamoy is the middle, but actually if you take all five levels of consciousness, manamoy or varnashram is the middle path. You know, if you really want to get technical. What to do? Okay. Jnanis recommend that one adopt Naishkarmi by not doing anything, but simply meditating and thinking of Brahman. But this is impossible unless one realizes Parabrahman, Krishna. If there is no Krishna conscious, any kind of activity, be it philanthropic, political, or social, simply causes karma, bandhana, bondage to material work. So their idea is Naishkarmi comes from doing nothing. But Krishna's idea is Naishkarmi comes from doing your work connected to him. Then gradually, then instead, you know, from giving a little to the result to giving more of the result to, you know, giving all the result, then the system works very well. That's the idea. Yeah. As long as one is entangled in karma bandhana, one must accept different types of bodies that spoil the human form of facility. Right? Being a pig, really hard to do human duties. Like that, you know. Though it doesn't mean that you won't be able to dress up in a suit and sit around the farmer's table. That you could possibly do, but we don't hear of any good management coming out of that. Yeah. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 6.3, Karma Yoga is recommended. For one who is a neophyte in the yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who has already attained to yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Right? That doesn't mean you stop the work, it means you stop the karma. Nonetheless, one who restrains the senses and organs of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Bhagavad Gita 3.6. So that's the point of just giving up the action and then saying we're renounced. That's not the point. We have to engage the nature in Krishna's service. Right? So the one we can engage is our nature, because the nature means the gross and the subtle. Right? So there's the skill and there's the qualities, so the karma, the guna. So we may be able to do a variety of skills, but that doesn't mean that we have the guna for that. You know, it's just like so many people can sing a little music. So that's a skill. But it doesn't mean that they have the guna that they can make an occupation out of it. That's why the two have to be together. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you don't not do work and you don't do someone else's work. You see the conditioning, and then both aspects, gross and subtle, that's engaged. One should act for Krishna very seriously in order to become fully Krishna conscious, and should not sit down to imitate such great personalities as Haridas Thakur. Right? Because he would chant 3 lakhs a day, every day. And he's been doing that since he was 5. I don't know if he was doing 3 lakhs then, but he left home at 5 and just started chanting. So, you want to imitate Hari Das, then let's start with that one. Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur points out that now an objection may be raised. But a person involved in actions being surrounded by such actions becomes bound up like an insect in a cocoon. Right? Because you're saying, perform your duties connected to Krishna, that'll make you transcendental. The doubt comes is now, no, but doing those duties, then I'll get caught up in them, and so therefore, you know, I'll be bound to the material nature. So better to stop activities, right? Because that's the Mayavadi's concept. Manu answers in verse 15. Right? So we saw as before is that Vedanta Sutra then Baladeva Vibhushan is pointing out that this is how this is the point that's being made. Now, the opposition to this, they'll come up with this doubt based on that. So therefore, he answers that by the next sutra. You see? So that's what Vishwanath is doing here in the Bhagavatam. Manu's made this point, how you should do your duties by doing that connected to the Lord. That's how you become detached. And then, but someone may say, no, but by doing the duties, you'll get caught up and you'll be bound. That's the doubt that comes. So now he says, Manu now is going to say this in the next verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is full and opulent by his own gain, yet he acts as the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this material world. In spite of acting in that way, he is never entangled, right? So why do we create something, right? For gain. Why do we maintain? For gain. Why do we destroy? For gain. But Krishna's, he is creating, maintaining, and annihilating, but there's no gain for him. He's self-sufficient. So he's in a different category. So therefore, the point is, as you connect yourself with the Lord, then in the same way, like that, you can be involved in activities and not be entangled. But it's the only way. Right? Does that make sense? That's the only way. One could say is, no, but Brahman is not, and it does no activities, but the point is you're in a body. So you can't do a Brahman thing. Right? So therefore, you can't do that. It won't work. But Krishna, coming in his form, with his form, he performs activities and remains unentangled. So therefore, we who have a body can do the same thing. That's the whole point. So technically, the impersonal philosophy won't work. In spite of acting in that... Hence, devotees who follow in his footsteps are also never entangled. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, works like an ordinary human being. Yet he does not desire to enjoy the fruits of work. Right? He's not doing it because he'll get something from it. Right? All the things he does is just... that's the duty. So for him, it's the interaction with the devotees that's important. So that's what we're trying to learn. Because now we do something because of the result we get from it. Right? That's why so much emphasis is put on the result. That's the secondary. Results in this form, you perform an action. You have knowledge of a secondary aspect. You apply the secondary aspect in action. It gets result. It's also secondary. So what's the primary? The primary is that devotion to Krishna. So Krishna is the same. He performs all the activities. They get all the results in the secondary. But it's not about that. It's about the devotion. It's about the interaction with the devotees. That's what we're having to learn to switch. Right now our consciousness is totally on the secondary. And we pointed out that there's a primary. And okay, it's there. But okay, how does that affect our secondary? But it's actually got to be, it's about the primary and how the secondary affects the primary. That's the opposite way of viewing. That's the transcendental view. That's the meaning of sarva dharma paritya. Right? Because if I'm performing duties and they get results, that's dharma. But if I'm performing devotion, that's transcendental. That's sad-dharma. Right? Does that make sense? The forms will be the same. But the point is how does the form of dharma help sad-dharma? Not how does sad-dharma help dharma? That's the beginning stage. Right? I'm performing the fruit of activity, I add Krishna. But at the later it's, I'm serving Krishna, I add the secondary. Mother Jashoda has affection for Krishna. That's the primary. Then she adds the secondary, goes to the kitchen and cooks something for him. Right? So it's not what she's cooked that's important. It's the devotion in which it's cooked. But how does he appreciate it? By the secondary aspect of eating it. But what's important is the primary of the devotion in which she cooked it. Yeah? footnote 6. There's no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. Right? So, he's not affected by the work. He doesn't need the results of the work. So if one understands that, that's how Krishna is working, then one can actually do things very nicely. Right? One himself does not become entangled. But if one thinks otherwise, then one will become entangled. So, yes. Yeah, so then, Manu then points out, he, meaning Krishna, is full in knowledge, free from material desires and diversions, and completely independent. As the supreme teacher of human society, he teaches his own way of activities. And thus he inaugurates the real path of religion. I request everyone to follow him. So that means is what he does is religion. And then the fun part is one of his 64 qualities is he follows what the Shastra says. Right? So what he does is what the Shastra says, and he does what the Shastra says. You know, so in other words, he's made up his own pastime, and then that pastime is documented, and then he follows it. Right? So that's the whole point. If we want to become like the Lord, we do like the Lord. We want to remain in our conditioned identity, we can do that. I mean, there's 7 billion human beings on the planet that are doing that, so that's not the big deal. The big deal is to do what Krishna says, understanding the mentality in which he does it. So in other words, he's doing it because you have to do some things. If the purpose is to interact with people, it's not about what you're interacting. What you're using is the medium. We make it all about the medium, right? The medium is the message. Right? That's the problem. We think the secondary is the real thing. It's not. It's the primary. Right? But you have to have a secondary to use. Therefore, we use the secondary that Krishna uses. Right? That's all. It means the things that Krishna does, that's what's being recommended for us to do. That's the Pancharatrik lifestyle. In other words, the natural lifestyle of those on the platform of Bhagavat, that's what's documented as sadhana in the Pancharatrik system. But it's still connected to Krishna. That's what makes it Pancharatra. The same rules that you can take it and not follow it connected to Krishna, but at least you follow the activities that Krishna does, that's called the Vedic system. Right? It's much broader. So when you get into Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, like that. But Upasanakanda means you're worshipping the Lord. So that would be the closest to Bhagavat. Right? In other words, it's the form, the secondary, without the primary having the love. So focusing on the developing that love for Krishna, we perform these secondary recommended activities given in Pancharatra, and then it works. And if we need to expand that into the broader social consideration, that goes into the Vedic. Right? You don't need tons of money to worship the deity. Right? But if we need that, we need social prestige, we need all these different things, that's going to be the Vedic. So then the Vedic should be supporting the worship of the deity, should be supporting worship, you know, the development of love for Krishna. That's the connection. We understand that, it works. We don't understand that, then we take out the, then we use the modern, and that's going to connect that to the deity worship. But the point is, deity is Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It's like, when we go into the temple room, why do we take off our shoes? Because we love to take our shoes off, right? No. No, because Krishna's there, so it's a consideration of him. If we make it, no, you don't have to take your shoes off because you're Westerners, then, I'm only citing an example I heard the other day of one temple that actually did this. Yeah, some big festival, they didn't, just no one had to take off the shoes. So, then it's about them, it's not about Krishna. And I don't know, but it was an ISKCON festival. So the thing is one has to be very, very careful, right? It's not that we don't do things like that, but then the link to take that, Bhaktisiddhanta, like we said, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he could organize caterers. He would invite over big British gentlemen and their families and get caterers who would then, you know, cook everything, arrange everything, and serve the meal. And he would sit there and talk with them. But the meal was not vegetarian. So, can we take it that far? No. So no, but the point is this. He's not there. He's not eating. He's not saying, oh, well, they'll feel bad if I don't. No. He just sits and talks. He doesn't eat this, but they're happy with that. So now they'll listen to him talk. I mean, if you can get him to listen to talk without that, why you do that? And so nowadays, because New Age is very popular, people listen to anything. In fact, you go into a yoga studio, who does their yoga with their shoes on? Name me one studio on the planet. There isn't one. So everyone knows, yoga, you take off your shoes. So where bhakti yoga, we take off your shoes. Part of the scene. I remember we used to have people come to the Sunday program because when they take off their shoes, there was a bit of a problem. Like that. So then the temple president had us out there with, you know, water and things like that. We'd wash their feet outside the, because the temple had a huge front kind of steps. So it was big enough so you could sit there and wash their feet. And then they would go into the temple. So they thought, this is far out. They've never been to a program where someone washes their feet before they go inside. So they were impressed. So yeah, you want to do, then do. That's culture. So people were impressed by that. But we want to do it. No culture, no endeavor, no. So we just want to sit idly and somehow another Krishna consciousness will just happen. So we won't really use the Western culture. We won't use the Vedic culture. We're just, you know, whatever kind of blasé, you know, middle of the road kind of jazz. Then my father, you worked for a radio station that played middle of the road music. Its poster was, you had on one side the classical musician, on the other side you had the rock guy, and it said middle of the road, it's in between, like that. That station doesn't function anymore. It closed. So middle of the road is overrated. Srila Prabhupada comments, this is the sum and substance of our Krishna consciousness movement. We are simply requesting human society to follow in the footsteps of the teacher of Bhagavad Gita. Follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Right? Not, you know, there's 700 other Gitas, not those ones. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Right? And your life will be successful. That is the summary of the Krishna consciousness movement. The organizer of the Krishna Conscious Movement is teaching everyone how to follow Lord Ramachandra, how to follow Lord Krishna, and how to follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this world, we need a leader for a monarchy or good government. Lord Sri Ramachandra, by his practical example, showed how to live for the benefit of all human society. He fought with demons like Ravana. He carried out the orders of his father, and he remained the faithful husband of Mother Sita. Thus, there is no comparison to Lord Ramachandra's acting as an ideal king. Indeed, people still hanker for Ram Rajya, a government conducted like that of Lord Ramachandra. Right? People want that. They want the government to be, look after them, take care of them, do everything for their benefit. So Lord Ramachandra is the perfect example. Similarly, although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he taught his disciple and devotee Arjuna how to lead a life ending in going back home, back to Godhead. Chaktva deham punarjanma naitimam eti sorjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4:9. All teachings, political, economic, social, religious, cultural, and philosophical, are to be found in Bhagavad Gita. One only has to follow them strictly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are to be found. Yeah. He being found in Bhagavad Gita, and he specifically mentions which Gita. I mean, okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also comes as Lord Chaitanya to play the part of a pure devotee. Thus, the Lord teaches us in different ways just to make our life successful. And Swami Bhuvamanu requests us to follow him. Right? So, if you're looking for leadership, Ramachandra is the example. You're looking for how to carry on day-to-day life. You know, it's always a question, how do I live my day-to-day life? Okay, come to the temple, I chant my japa, but then after that, I have to go out and do the... That's Krishna. And then how to do things, the mood of a devotee, that's Lord Chaitanya. So that covers everybody. Right? So Lord Chaitanya, that mood everybody's doing, and then we see is there are those who are just doing their daily lives and those who are leading. Does that make sense? So these are the examples. Prabhupada says this is what the movement is for. Because people in these situations are perfect. They're happy. Right? The residents of Navadvip are happy. The residents of Dwarka are happy. And Vrindavan are happy. The residents of Ayodhya are happy. So we're looking for happiness. This is it. Right. There isn't something else. So therefore Manu says, follow the Lord. Because that's the only way it's going to work. And so his instructions, therefore, why would Manu be saying this if Manu Samhita wasn't how to follow in the footsteps of the Lord? That's what it's about. People may misinterpret it because they'll look at it from their secondary condition, their secondary attributes of their secondary conditioning. And then that's the problem. Or even from their primary conditioning, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So yes. You know. So that will be a problem. That won't work. Yeah, that's another way to look at it. We put in the primary of I'm the controller and enjoyer and use the secondary of, you know, like that. So therefore, if I'm the controller and enjoyer, the Vedic secondary is not very good, but the modern is better for me to be the controller and enjoyer. Because the Vedic doesn't really support that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So it's not in support of the primary, therefore as the secondary it has to go. Make sense? Swayambhuva Manu is the leader of mankind, and he has given a book called Manu Samhita to guide human society. Herein, he directs us to follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his different incarnations. Swayambhuva Manu instructs us to follow the instructions of God's incarnations, especially Krishna's instructions of Bhagavad Gita. Right? So therefore, if you understand Bhagavad Gita and apply that understanding when one looks at, follows Manu, then it will work. If we just try to follow Manu with our own perspective, it's not going to work. Appreciating Bhakti Marg is instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thus depicted the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Quote, let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has descended in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us real knowledge. His devotional service and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness, right? So real knowledge, sambandha, his devotional service, abhideya, and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness, prayojana. Right? He has descended because he is an ocean of transcendental mercy. Let me surrender unto his lotus feet. Chaitanya Chandradoy Nataka 674. So that would mean Act 6, verse 74. In this age of Kali, people cannot follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore the Lord himself takes the part of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach personally how to become Krishna conscious. He asks everyone to follow him and to become a guru to deliver the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. So therefore, if we're saying that to become a guru and everybody's supposed to do that, that means everybody's not being a Diksha guru. So it's about siksha, because you're delivering people through instruction, not through Diksha. Right? Diksha is the connection, but it's the instructions that are going to deliver. So even for a Diksha guru, it's the instructions that are most important. Right? So that's what it means by everyone be guru. Okay. Did I say, and try to liberate everyone?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 7.128. The coherent purpose of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to teach human society how to be happy by following the instructions of the Supreme Lord. Right? So that's why they go all together. So that's why Lord Chaitanya instructed that we chant, you know, Hari Rama, Hari Krishna. So it goes together. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Swayambhuva Manu was thus in a trance, chanting the mantras of Vedic instruction known as the Upanishads. Upon seeing him, the Rakshasas and Asuras, being very hungry, wanted to devour him. Guy's distracted. Right? He's not aware of what's going on. Therefore, they ran after him with great speed. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, who sits in everyone's heart, appearing as Yajnapati, observed that the Rakshasas and demons were going to devour Swayambhuva Manu. Thus, the Lord, accompanied by his sons, named the Yamas, and by all the other demigods, killed the demons and Rakshasas. He then took the post of Indra and began to rule the heavenly kingdom. The son of Agni, named Swarochisha, became the second Manu. So he became the Indra. Yeah, so here Vishnu took the position of Indra because there was no Indra. Right? Because it generally is all the posts within the universe, they're taken by jivas, right? Except for Shiva. But if there is no jiva to perform it, then Krishna himself takes the role. So this is an action where, as Yajna, as mentioned, I think he was, he's one of the sons of one of the Prajapatis, like that. And so then he took the position of Indra. Right? And then the son of Agni, named Swaruchishta, became the next Manu. So this was Swayambhuva. So he had gone to the forest, and he was meditating on the Lord. So then protecting the Manu, then the next Manu then took his position. His several sons were headed by Jumat, Sushena, and Rochishmat, 18 through 20. Verses 20 through 30, Sukadeva Goswami describes Swarochisha, Uttama, and Tamasa Manu. Sukadeva Goswami continued. During the reign of Swarochisha, the post of Indra was assumed by Rochana, the son of Yajna. Tushita and others became the principal demigods. And Urja, Stamba, and others became the seven saints. All of them were faithful devotees of the Lord. Veda Shira was a very celebrated rishi. From the womb of his wife, whose name was Tushita, came the avatar named Vibhu. Vibhu remained a brahmachari and never married throughout his life. From him, 88,000 other saintly persons took lessons on self-control, austerity, and similar behavior. O king, so that's the advantage you see, is that the why in preaching the brahmachari is recommended, because brahmacharya then gives that potency to convince. So you see here, as a brahmachari, he's preaching to 88,000. Right? Nard Muni could then, the sons of Daksha, the 10,000, the next 10,000, like that. That's the benefit. That's what I said. Preaching is always going to have effect, but have so much influence. That's the potency of brahmacharya. Does that make sense? That's why it's recommended. So as a brahmachari, grihastha brahmachari, that makes the strongest position for preaching. O king, the third Manu, Uttama, was the son of King Priyavrata. Among the sons of this Manu were Pavana, Srinjaya, and Yajnahotra. During the reign of the third Manu, Pramada and other sons of Vishishta became the seven sages. The Satyas, Vedashrutas, and Bhadras became demigods, and Satyajit was selected to be Indra, the king of heaven. So when we say Indra, it means the post. He has a particular name. I don't remember the name of our Indra, but he has a specific name. Just like here, this is Satyajit, and he's the Indra.
Purandara.
Hmm?
Purandara is not our Indra?
Purandara, okay. Yeah, so that's his name. In this Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared from the womb of Sunrita, who is the wife of Dharma, the demigod in charge of religion. The Lord was celebrated as Satyasena, and he appeared with other demigods known as the Satyavratas. Satyasena, along with his friend Satyajit, who was the king of heaven, Indra. Okay, I was going to think as how did King Indra killed all the untruthful, impious, and misbehaved yakshas, rakshasas, and ghostly living entities who gave pains to other living entities. Right? So one can be in those positions to perform one's duties nicely, but it's not an uncommon thing for those in those particular species to get a little out of hand. So then sometimes things have to be adjusted. Like we see with the sun god, there's a rakshasa that travels with him and takes care of all those who would bother. So there are those, or like Ghatotkacha. He was a Rakshasa, but very, you know, did everything very nicely. He had his own priests. Forget what it was. This, what? Yeah, I can never remember it. Ghatotkacha and that whole thing and the marriage and the Maya Bazaar. Mm-hmm. No, you don't remember it. You remember? She, you remember who were the two?
Abhimanyu.
In this one, it was so. Oh, that was Aniruddha. Abhimanyu.
Arjuna's son.
Subhadra's son. Oh, Subhadra's son. Okay. Now it's starting to make sense. Some of I always think it was one Balram of Krishna's sons. Daughter. And?
Shashikala is Balaram's daughter.
Balaram.
Daughter
of Balaramji.
Balaram's daughter. Oh, okay.
What's the story?
You don't know that story. You always had story? Okay, Maya Bazaar. It's not so well known in North, it's very popular in South. Like that. So, Balaram's daughter, her name was?
Shashi Reka.
Oh, Shashi Reka was the one that drew the pictures for Usha, for Aniruddha, okay. Yeah, it gets complicated. That's what Prabhupada said. Only, what's her name? Who did all the painting?
Jadarani
could remember all these, you know, who is who and like that. So Shashi Reka. Then, okay, and then you have Abhimanyu. So Abhimanyu is going through, I guess, through the forest, and that must have been hunting. He may have been with friends or like that. I'm not sure. Then he comes into the area that's controlled by Ghatotkacha. So then he comes out there. He's there. He's a human. He's coming into his area. Why is he coming here? So it looks like it's going to be a problem. And then, you know, they discuss and they find out who they are. Right? And they find out their relatives. You know, they're all, you know, like that. So then, great. You know, then they invite him over. He's there. They're all, you know, brothers hanging out, cousins, you know. So like this and that. And while they're talking and that, they're cousins. They're not brahmacharis as such, right? You know? And so then in the discussion comes up about, you know, the girls and that. And then it comes up about Abhimanyu's interest in Shashi Reka. And so then, but Balaram wants to marry her too. Who else?
Duryodhana's son.
Okay, yeah, because he wanted to marry Subhadra to Duryodhana. Probably had the whole plan worked out, but it didn't quite. It never works out because Krishna gets involved in messes with that. Right? So he did with Subhadra, so he's going to do with this one. Okay? So, oh, that was it. Yeah, Lakshmana. Right? Yeah, okay. So then they think, oh, how to do this, because there's going to be the wedding's going to be there. So then Ghatotkacha says, you know, don't worry, he'll go down and get the girl. So he's the Rakshasa, he can fly, so he flies down there. And he's going to go into Dwarka. You know, and then going in there, then there's this old guy sitting there next to the gate, you know, like this and that. And he says, you know, and he asks, who are you? So he doesn't pay attention. You know, says, and then he says, you can't go in without my permission. It's kind of like, me? And you? He just says, you're the guy that's kind of letting me. So he just goes in. And then when he goes in, he goes into Shashi Reka's, you know, her bedroom. And there are 10,000 beds there, all with Shashi Reka's in them. And then he looks around and he goes, okay, now this is some serious mystic power. So then he goes back out to the old guy, says, okay, who are you? And then, you know, he explains this, Krishna and this and that, and who are you? Ghatotkacha, you know, so he's relative and this and that. Okay, cool. Why are you here? Then he explains how Abhimanyu wants to marry Shashi Reka. And that, but Balaram wants and this and that. And Krishna says, yeah, I don't like the arrangement either with Lakshmana. So he says, what's your plan? You know, because the point is, you know, Krishna can do things himself, but it's more fun to do with the devotees. So the devotees come up with all the plans. So he says, he's going to take Shashi Reka there with his own priests and that. They'll all be married and that. And then he'll come and he'll, by his mystic power, he'll take the position of Shashi Reka. And then in this way, he'll mess up the wedding. And so then the wedding party will leave. So Krishna says, he liked this. Right? So then he lets them go in. He finds Shashi Reka, picks her up in the bed, takes her there, and then she wakes up there, and then the marriage, and
happy, happy, right? Like that. So then Ghatotkacha, then he arranged, because all this happens at night, you know, the Rakshasas, they do everything like that. So then he has to be there in the morning before she wakes up. So he brings all his guys, right? And then they all set up. So across from Dwarka there, then there's this huge market set up on the mainland, because you come to there and then you take the boats to Dwarka. And so then he takes the position of Shashireka, does everything perfectly like that, and then this huge market, and then Duryodhan is his party come. And when they come, they see this market, and it's kind of, what's this market doing here? And so then they see this amazing stuff. It means whatever they're wearing, whatever they got, it's better. And so it's like, wow, this is good. How much for this? He says it's free. All you have to do is give us whatever you want, give us in exchange for that. You want a new shirt, give us your old one. You want new shoes, give us your old shoes. You know, you want a new club or this, give us that, well, that, like that. So they thought, wow, they've never seen this before at a wedding arrangement, right? You know, because you're always trying to do something novel, right? So then they made this arrangement. And so then they traded, because everything was better than what they had, and they want to look good, and it's in their mind it's arranged by the marriage party. In one sense it is, but not exactly the main people involved. So they trade everything, you know, all the men, all the women, you know, the saris, the jewel, everything's amazing. So they changed it all, and now looking very resplendent, they all get on the boats, go to Dwarka and all that, they all come there, and this, and they're received, and everything starts going nicely, and everything like that. And then, but now you have a few problems here. Ghatotkacha is not a dainty little princess. He's a big monster Rakshasa, right? So they're cooking for all these people and smelling the food. He's hungry, right? And he's not just going to sit there and, you know, eat and all that kind of stuff. So he, therefore, when, you know, after the cooking's done, he goes into the kitchen. And then, you know, he takes his full size. And because, you know, there's not a whole lot of time. And just full size, and he sucks up all the pots into his mouth, you know, and then spits the pots out, right? So then all these huge, because you're talking for thousands and thousands of people. Huge pots, they're not small pots. You know, so all in the kitchen, all these bang, clang, all these things are just crashing on the ground. So everyone wonders, what happens like this? And so everyone comes running into the kitchen to see what's going on. They see all these piles of things like that. They look over because Ghatotkacha couldn't get out. So there's Shashileka over in the corner like, oh, no, it's like that. Like that. So they get her out and this and what happened? I don't know. I just heard me like this or whatever. So like that. So, you know, he's okay. Then, you know, everything's there and they're all having their, you know, their program and all that, because you receive the guests, you feed them all nicely and that, and then they're going to go to their rooms. When they go to their rooms, then that they go out to put on their shoes, and just as they go to put on their shoes, the shoes turn into frogs and hop off, right? And it's kind of like, that's weird. But they don't think of anything. So they go back to their rooms and all this and that, the night and that. So then the next day, because you always have 3 days a program, right? You know, so weddings generally on the third day, and then they stay for, you know, some days, and on the fourth day, then they take their girl and go back. So the next, you know, the next day they're there and they're all there, you know, the dinners and everybody's there, huge thing, arrangement, they're all eating and all this and that. And then all their clothes disappear. I mean, all of them. So everyone is sitting there with no clothes on. So everyone goes running out and this and that, go to put something else on and stuff like this. You know, so then, you know, okay, second day weird. Then the third day, then, okay, it's time for the wedding. So, okay, the wedding's here, you know, do this, get out of here, you know, like that. And so then they're doing, and then it goes, you know, the first one, the girl comes out with her head covered and everything like that and goes around and like this. And then the boy opens it, so he's the first to see, you know. So you just see. So when he opens, there's Ghatotkacha, you know, the teeth and the mustache and like that. He faints like that. So then you know, they just figure, you know, everybody thinks, wow, she must be beautiful. So they're not worried about this one. You know, so then, you know, they revive him and all that. And he's like, well, what happened? And, you know, but the cloth is off and actually looks like Shashireka. And so, you know, it wasn't that. It was just, you know, his, what was that, you know? Then they go, for the next one is then they tie the hands, you know, like that. So they tie the hands and, you know, they hold hands a little bit. And so in the thing like that, then Kadodgash just squeezes his hand a bit. So much so that he faints from the pain again. So they just think, wow, this guy's a little over emotional. Okay. You know, okay, yeah, beautiful girl, this, that. But hey, you know, we're Kshatriyas. It's not that big of a deal. Like that. Then, you know, so then, you know, nobody sees that. And that then the next one that comes is the, you know, asmakramana, right? Putting the foot on the stone, like that. So you can imagine, they go, you know, put the foot on the stone, and there's this rakshasa foot with nails and hair and like that. And then that's it. They just freak, and that's it. We're leaving and all this. Duryodhana's party just storm out and leave. We're not interested. So they just go, and that Balaram's sitting there trying to this and that and like that, but Krishna's not upset, you know. So then this, why aren't you upset, you know? Because now he doesn't know what's going on, and he's the Supreme Lord, right? The whole cosmic creation, its expansion is coming from the Kriya Shakti. He's the Lord of it. That means he knows everything, but this he can't figure out. So what does that mean? It means it's Krishna's Yoga Maya. So he says, okay, what's going on here? So then he explains that, well, actually, Shashi Rekha wanted to marry Abhimanyu and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And so then, okay, Balaram's that. So then they, you know, and then they bring, you know, and then he's going to get, you know, Kadod got this and that. Krishna, no. He said, you know, it was authorized. I knew what was happening. So then Balaram is there. So then it's agreed. So then Kadodgach goes. He brings the couple there. Then they have the big, you know, their you know, the whole wedding that was there. They have it all for them and Haribal. Okay, is that good?
Okay. This is famous because of the folk stories in the south. It comes from thousands of years.
Yeah.
It's not mentioned in any of the major Mahabharata.
Yeah, no, it's not. That's the problem. It's everybody knows it in South, but where it's from, there's a little bit here and there, but it doesn't, because it's not a major story. That's why I can never remember the names.
What's the name of that story?
They call it Maya Bazaar. Like that, because that's the crux of it. It's the whole thing. It's all illusion.
It's the title
everything.
Given by in 16th century, around some person has written.
Okay.
As a drama play.
Okay. Yeah.
Because famous.
Yes, very famous. You know, there's movies on it. Yeah. And, you know, they're old. They'd be from like the 50s and stuff like that. You know, but it's you know like Sita Swayambar. It's like that kind of thing. You know, that kind of classic. But it's good. It's funny. Like that. Yeah, so I'm telling how I told it, that's how Atmatattva used to tell it. And he would have heard from, you know, best South Indian storytellers, you know, the guys that know all the stories, all the different things like that. Okay. So with that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanati.